Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Good day, good evening, and good streaming. I am Jello Biafra. This is Renegade Roundtable. And here we are with round two with Firebrand Dynamo, activist, disability rights crusader, and the main brain and wingnut of wheelchair sports camp hip hop group Denver's own Kalen Heffernan. And so now we both took a pee break. You took a weed break.
Pee and weed.
Do you smoke for strictly for pleasure, or is it also medicinal?
It's mostly for pleasure. But I have been dabbling into the edible world a little more for pain if I need it.
Do you feel a lot of pain all the time, or comes and goes?
I've been really lucky most of my life to not have pain in between being broken, which isn't as regular as it used to be as a kid. So but now that I'm getting older, now I'm 36, I am starting to deal with like weather pain and achy pain, and starting to break bones, like doing less traumatic things, you know, just like I don't even know, like stress fractures, which is new for me. So yeah, it's a new world, but I've been really lucky most of my life to not have a lot of pain associated with my broken bones, except when they're broken, which does suck and hurts.
Yeah, because you do feel it, and it doesn't feel too good.
No, but I have a pretty high pain tolerance. higher drug tolerance.
And for anybody who didn't hear our first hour, what is the name of your condition again?
It's called osteogenesis imperfecta, aka brittle bones, commonly called OI for short.
Oi, oi, oi. Oh, yeah. Well, let's talk about music itself. When we first met that night at the Wax Track store and you told me about what you did to Senator Cory Gardner's office, which never stops cracking me up, and I think it was before you ran for mayor, though, and you gave me a CD of Wheelchair Sports Camps titled No Big Deal. And I thought, okay, I'll listen to this when the time comes, and I assumed it was a punk band. I just, you know, just for some reason, activism, somebody wanting to meet me, this must mean it's a punk band. Then I put it on, and luckily I didn't wipe out in my mom's car or whatever while driving, like, what is this? What is, it's just like, it's like an electronic Captain Beefheart in its own weird way. And you probably don't know who he is, but a lot of listeners will. But it doesn't really sound like that either. It was just, it was abstract, it was different. I didn't immediately peg it as hip hop either, although I eventually, like, you know, this is kind of like a very, very, very weird version of hip hop. More power to them. And then later on, so I became a little more familiar, your ace videographer and our mutual good friend Chris Bagley, who is also responsible for Wesley Willis's Joyride, by far the best documentary film about Wesley Willis, and he's grown as a videographer and everything else, and now he's working with you, and up went this video called a song called Yes, I'm a Mess. And even the still picture of you, and then which is the and then the song itself is like, oh my God, this is still damn near unclassifiable. It's really, really great. And those two things, unclassifiable and really, really great, meant, should I finally ask and see if you want to put any vinyl or anything out on Alternative Tentacles? And you did. And on the other side of the 7-inch, you offered one newer track, and I said, no, this is introducing Wheelchair Sports Camp to probably a lot of new people, and mostly people who did not hear the CD that came out years ago that Sage Francis put out, the hip-hop artist and stuff. So on the other side was one of the early anthems to get people clued in. It's Hard Out There Being a Gimp. And that is round one before the hoped-for album. And here we are.
Here we are. It was an easy yes because, yeah, we always want to put out vinyl. And I love vinyl, and it's not an easy thing to put out. So thank you for putting it out and putting it into the world. And yeah, I'm glad you got to see the video. And that's Chris Bagley and I's third video together now. So that guy has a lot of footage of me.
He's going to get all the video of this of both of us, too. So we'll see what he's making a documentary about you, isn't he?
Yeah, he's been following me around with the camera for a long time.
Well, he did a great job on the one where he followed Wesley around for a long time and even met members of his family and many, many other things. So when we met to have a meeting, Mark Bleasner was there again, and Chris was there too, I think, at this center where your recording studio you work out of is. At the time, it seemed like you were so dialed in on making the video singles and dropping one after the other over time, and then not even putting out hard copy audio at all. It didn't strike me as where you really were interested in vinyl very much, but oh yeah, well, we'll do this. Why not? So sounds like either you got more interested or you were more interested than I thought you were.
Yeah,
and
I didn't.
And also,
we didn't have vinyl. Sage Francis and Strange Famous Records did put out like a very small run, 7-inch, and that went pretty quick.
Oh, it was a 7-inch.
Vinyl
junkie record collector me wants one.
Yeah, and we've always wanted to put No Big Deal out on vinyl, but the packaging of No Big Deal, which you have, is a pop-up house. So in order to make the package for a 12-inch to pop out, you know, it's going to take a big flex. And I don't know if I'm willing to let go of the art concept.
The only compromise I can think of is normally I really get annoyed if somebody puts out a vinyl 12-inch and then throws a CD booklet in and calls the insert art complete.
That just drives
me nuts. But in this case, except this one, it is a pop-up thing. You have to assemble it, and it's 3D. It's like, like some of those pop-up Christmas cards, only that involves a little more work on the person who's brought it home. So the CD version of that thrown into a 12-inch LP would probably be kosher in a case like that, so people got the pop-up house.
Good idea.
Yeah. Well, where did the name come from?
No Big Deal. Or the band name?
Wheelchair Sports Camp.
Wheelchair Sports Camp. It came from, not surprisingly, a wheelchair sports camp. There is a local wheelchair sports camp here in Colorado. It's called the Colorado Junior Wheelchair Sports Camp. I attended it as a kid. And it's actually really dope. It's free. They bus in kids from all across the city. It's so many wheelchairs just taking over high school for a week during the summer. They provide food. They do a trophy ceremony. It's super cool. But, you know, I was too cool for it, but I still went every year and brought my friends, and, you know, we would like ditch and go do bad things. And we like, the only sport we really played was like tennis, but we never really followed our group. I did volunteer as a teenager once I could drive, and yeah, I still try to go every year and get my shirt, and I get a Google alert now for the name Wheelchair Sports Camp. So, you know, I get all kinds of informational news about different wheelchair sports camps all across the world. However, this one here in Colorado, I think, is the only one that I've seen full week long that's free. Free food, free shirt, free transportation. So big ups to Wheelchair Sports Camp here in Colorado. I did tell them, and I don't know if I quite asked for permission to use the name, but we're cool. They're cool with it. And we've thrown some benefit shows for them. And
there you go.
Yeah, they've been doing it forever.
Ask about the funding and hoping it wasn't from Coors or the Koch brothers.
No, although, shit, if they need to get the money from wherever they can to make it free, then so
right.
be it. But, that's a good question. I never have been involved in the funding, but it was started by a group of adaptive PE teachers in Denver Public Schools or Aurora Public Schools, actually. So big ups to them.
And with Wheelchair Sports Camp, I noticed some of your bio stuff identifies you as queercore as well, or as queer activist as well. Do you find any kind of a label like that limiting at all?
No, queer is cool because it's so big. You know, it's a big umbrella. I mean, I'm cool with just gay too. You know, like, to me, gay is like the whole umbrella of queerness. But for other people, gay is like strictly with the same gender. I'm queer. I'm gay. I'm that. And is it limiting? Yeah, it can't be. No, for me, it's definitely more liberating than being straight.
More liberating than ghettoizing. And it's a queercore band. I don't need to listen to that. Oh, yes, you do.
No, it's liberating. I would hate to be straight. Yeah, straight. No offense, but being straight is more limiting for me.
Yeah, well, for me too. If I was born bisexual, there might have been a lot less lonely nights years ago. Yeah. But I just was not made that way. I'm sorry.
Me too. It's okay.
But how do you identify? You say queer and gay. Do you identify female or something else?
I like all the pronouns: she, her, they, them, he, him. I mean, I rock a mustache. I've always dressed very tomboyish, but I still identify with lots of my femininity, and I'm pretty open. I identify as open.
There you go. And being so late to the party, and it's just amazing how many of these different underground scenes, and even hip hop versus punker versus rocker versus other kinds of hip hop and things, how many people just miss finding out about cool things. I mean, Matt Kelly, my longtime engineer from Tumor Circus up through White People and the Damage Done, Jell Biafra and the Guantanamo School of Medicine and all, he's mainly a hip hop engineer and a name hip hop engineer who started out second engineering digital underground around the same time he and I were working on Tumor Circus at Hyde Street Studios. That led to a little bit of work with Tupac and then a lot of other people hitting him up over the years, from The Coup to Hieroglyphics to Souls of Mischief, of course, and many others. So he identifies that way too, and he's way dialed into local underground hip hop and some in Atlanta where he moved to, but he's about to move back. But anyway, and he would complain to me from time to time about, you know, it really frustrates me how there's so little creative experimentation in hip hop now. It's kind of bugging me and I'm getting a little bored. I send him Wheelchair Sports Camp and he flipped. He got it right away. I was like, I want to produce them. I want to work on something with them. These people are great. And he totally got it from a hip hop point of view. But if your partner's moving to Denver to be with you instead of the other way around, well, you said it can always be done remotely by mail, though. So you and Matt may one day cross paths, and who knows, he may bring in his own people.
We'll still be in the Bay often.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
I'd be happy to go out there. And yeah, that just, it does make me think about how, like, yeah, some of the labels, especially around hip hop, because it's such a male dominated, you know, style of music. But yeah, I mean, recording engineering is even more of a boys club. Producing, just a producer, is like even more. That being said, like, I think being a femme, being a queer, being disabled, even, you know, yeah, just being who I am, I think one thing that I was really just turned off by was like those boxes of checking identities. And it's like, you know, I always wanted to be a good rapper. You know, I didn't just want to be like a good female rapper. I didn't want to just be a good disabled rapper. I didn't want to be just a good gay rapper, you know? And yet, like, so I've kind of like shrugged away at the beginning of, you know, putting my music out there. Like, I didn't really want to be confined to those boxes and did feel limited. And the more that I like identified with myself and accepted my identities, like, you know, because those are such a big part of my identities, like, it wasn't fair for me to be like, I don't want to just be a good disabled rapper, but like, I'm clearly in a wheelchair. I got wheelchair in the band name. I'm making puns and punchlines about being in a wheelchair. It's like part of me feeling limited by all that was also like a lot of like internalized ableism and like internalized masculinity, right? Like, I just wanted to be like compared to all these good dude rappers that I came up with. And not just them. I mean, I did come up on a lot of like women fronted, heavy, identifying, empowering feminists, you know, TLC, the Salt and Pepa, and Missy Elliott, like those three like shaped me. And like, I don't think I would have been so into rap if it wasn't fronted by them.
I mean, because your own sound is so unique, there is another revival going on in punk or indie or whatever underground of people making electronic punk and rock records, and often very lo-fi, and making them at home. Mm-hmm. Not all of them. It's become kind of its own scene in some ways. There's not a huge number of them. They probably all know each other. But even though you wouldn't be classified as punk, I am guessing some of those people and some of that audience are going to dial in on the Yes, I'm a Mess 7-inch.
Cool.
I think they're gonna get into it too.
I mean, yeah, I wasn't really like in the punk world, but I think like my approach to making music has always been pretty punk and like lo-fi and DIY. Like, yeah, I couldn't afford to pay dudes to make beats for me. Like, I wouldn't have been able to like pay dudes to play the guitar for me, you know. So I had to do it myself and taught myself and started like, you know, becoming more closer with dope musicians and learned how to like record it and capture it and sample things. And yeah, so I, you know, this microphone that I'm on is like the only microphone I've ever had. Like, every record has been recorded on it up till a certain time where like we were recording in a studio. So I hope it translates still to that, because that's definitely where I come from.
Well, your studio, where you do indeed, you write your stuff, you record your stuff, you produce your stuff, and probably at least, mix your stuff or have help here and there with all of it. But this studio, isn't that the one that we got together and hung out in while we were talking about putting the record out? And your actual home in, I believe, public housing is right across the street. Tell us about this facility, because it's part of a larger facility that's really cool.
Yeah, I teach for a nonprofit organization in town called Youth on Record. Youth on Record was started by a band here in town called the Flowbots, rock guys, and they started an organization. Youth on Record was the music production class when I got out of college for recording. I started booking some of their shows, so I was doing more talent by booking and hosting, and I was pretty eager to go and volunteer in the class. I wasn't working at the time. Yeah, I've been teaching with them ever since, and over the years, we acquired this dope place here in West Denver, and it was a big partnership with Denver Housing Authority and a bunch of other different funders to have a recording studio. And then I scored and got an apartment close by. So yeah, I have access to a much better studio than my backpack studio now. And
that's awesome.
Yeah. And the older I get, for sure, and the more hopefully professional team I can put together, it is ideal to have other people do things for me now and not just do it all myself. I think there is a certain point where that can be a little limiting. It's I can't be an expert in all these things, and I've learned to do them because I needed to, and certain things yeah, I'm better at than some people, but for the most part, mastering engineers are masters of that art, right. And mixing engineers are masters of that art. And it's nice to not do every single thing myself. And though, I wouldn't trade it. And when other weird things happen and other projects come up, depending on the budget, I know how to do all these things. So for the mayor thing, we didn't need a budget to make campaign videos and commercials and stuff. Right. I made my own logo, and I do quite a bit of graphic arts because of the band, and made the websites and made the videos.
Right.
Do the drawings.
What else can people come study and learn at Youth on Record? It's not just recording studio stuff, is it?
No, so we teach a bunch of 4-credit classes in high schools across the town.
Wow.
Typically credit recovery programs I taught in a treatment center for a long time, so kids were court ordered to live there. They're basically incarcerated. That was a music production class. I've mostly only taught music production, but I'm transitioning out of teaching into doing a more professional development mentorship for students that are just graduating. So they're no longer public school students. So that'll be cool. But yeah, I've been teaching at Youth on Record for a decade now. And we haven't always had that studio, but now that we do, it's been great. We've been there for maybe 6 years now, something like that. And it's really just been so awesome to have access to that and share it with youth. And yeah, it's also a good place to meet weirdos like you late at night while I'm trying to cut some vocals. Before I was actually cutting vocals the night that we hung out there for our Meow Wolf room inside of Meow Wolf. There's a song in there, and it's a 10-minute song. So I had to cut my vocals that night.
Oh, was that after we hung out or before?
That was after. That's why I was like, okay, everybody has to go now because I have to finish this.
Because the other thing, we were told, oh, it's too late. The neighbors get upset if there's too much noise down there.
Oh, yeah.
We're just
talking. So maybe I did already record it. I just had to, like, mix it all. Because I did have. But you could usually track, like, vocals solo. You know, like, as long as I'm not playing, like, the drums super late or, like, guitars. Yeah, it can't be a rehearsal space that late.
And you've been rocking wheelchair sports camp as long or longer than you've been teaching. Like, is this year 11 or is it longer than that?
What year is it? 2023?
Fuck. 2023. Yeah, hard to believe.
I mean, it could probably date back to like 2009. Maybe. I feel like we started getting a little more like, yeah, our first trip out of Denver was 2011 to South by Southwest. So before
you've toured a lot.
That was two years before that we started it. It wasn't always a band. Yeah, it's been a minute.
Right. So you've toured a lot, actually. And what kind of venues book you? Is it regular music venues or is there also disabled community stuff and activist organizations that bring you into different places?
Well, touring for the most part, I just was like booking anywhere that would take us. If I was booking it for ourselves, you know, it's always more ideal to catch on somebody else's tour and be support. So we did that a little bit as well. Mm-hmm. And then there has been a time, I mean, I was pretty like used to playing in accessible venues, to be honest, like the DIY venue that Greg, my drummer, started was very inaccessible. And because I'm so tiny, I usually like bring my manual chair. Like I was pretty used to doing like everything inaccessibly and being kind of the only one. And then it wasn't until we started touring that I realized like how many disabled people were listening and like how much support we did have. Before leaving Denver, I didn't really know. I was like having like a guilty conscience that like I wanted to make sure that it was like clearly listed somewhere that like if I was playing an inaccessible venue, like I needed people to know so that like they didn't show up and not know, you know, like. And
or make the venue get everybody in somehow.
Yeah, so I did start like being a little bit more thoughtful about just like how I publish things and making sure like to include that information. But going on our first tour, we actually supported the Flowbots on a really big nationwide tour, and we played San Francisco Cafe de Nord, which I did not know was inaccessible, and I did not book. And I didn't think it would really be anything, but shit, all kinds of people were like emailing me, MySpace me. No, I don't think MySpace was still there, but they were pissed that I was playing this inaccessible venue. And that was the first time that I like encountered that. And we did like a free show on the sidewalk in front of the venue before soundcheck, or maybe after soundcheck, before the show. So yeah, like, I don't know. I kind of like roll this weird line where because of the privilege I have to like be carried and like be okay with being carried a lot of times, I think it's like more of a statement for me to like play and talk shit about it on stage, you know, which I do and have always. Yeah. But I don't know. The older I get and like, you know, I got a boo in a chair and I got more friends in the disability community. Like it does weigh on me more. And there have been times where like the disability community has like booked a show for us in Portland, actually, like couldn't get a date. And like somebody reached out and was like, let us help you. And it was packed with people with disabilities. Like, it was so dope. Yeah, it is out there. And like, yeah, I think doing the sit-in and like the crossover between my activism with like the disability world and like even just making this Meow Wolf room that's so like disability heavy. I think there are a decent amount of disabled people listening to Wheelchair Sports Camp.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Well, you've brought it up twice now, so let's detour to the Meow Wolf Complex in Denver, and not everybody tuning in is going to know what Meow Wolf is at all.
Okay, yeah, Meow Wolf is a complex. It's a big art facility started by some DIY guys and gals in Santa Fe, New Mexico. And they were able to acquire a pretty big space, and they made this like immersive attraction that also has a venue that we've played at. And they built their third location in Denver, Colorado. So it's like humongous. And they hired a lot of local artists to build design permanent installations within this giant complex. And yeah, we pitched like a wheelchair space kitchen. There's a big ass wheelchair space kitchen in Meow Wolf, Denver, built by me and Greg and my dad, an iron worker. And it's kind of like this wheelchair time portal, basically like a DIY space from the old 70s and 80s activists left behind and built and retrofitted for themselves. And it's like this scrappy spot that weirdos like us are still occupying, and definitely like got a future, disability future vibe. It's wild. It was a big flex.
What I saw from the construction video was you were building both a retrofitted kitchen for somebody of your height and your disability to be able to do thing, you know, take care of themselves in the kitchen and feed themselves and all that good stuff. But also some rather large things, I think like sinks and other stuff, way, way high. So anybody who stands up, who's my height, I think I'm, what am I, 5'8" or a little bit more than that, and reaches up, they can't reach it at all. It's big. It's way up there as a statement on what a so-called normal kitchen would be like to try and cope with if you're in a wheelchair. That's part of it too, right?
Yeah. Yeah, originally we wanted to make it just like this tiny little kitchen where like somebody like you would just be so uncomfortable in and like barely be able to crouch under. But that wasn't accessible, so we couldn't build that. So we ended up getting like 15 feet ceilings, which is like almost three times the amount of space we were hoping for. So we kind of flipped the script, and one of the OG Meow Wolf guys had an idea. But yeah, we're like, maybe we distort some things up top. And yeah, my kitchen right now, which I'm very close to, all the top cabinets are empty, or like storage for my friends. Like, they're right, completely out of reach and of zero use to me. So yeah, the kitchen we built, like the bottom half is more like roll under counters and curved out for a wheelchair. The sink handles are backwards, so they're closer to the front of the counter. Like, I can't reach too far to the back of the counter. And then everything up top right. is, like, out of a normal person's reach. So, and then there's, like, other little Easter eggs hidden within the room for other types of disabilities. Like, you can feel the song if you open a certain drawer. If you roll under a certain counter, like, which you kind of have to be in a wheelchair. Like, the disco ball kicks on. There's a low sensory fridge for people that are stimulated by sensory, because Meow Wolf is very high sensory, even for people that aren't super sensitive to it. It's five floors of a lot of art and a lot of lights and a lot of sound. There's a space in our room that's like chill and calming. There's some hidden braille messages throughout. Yeah, the idea is that, like, you can't really access the full spectrum of the room unless you have each other, you know, unless you have different types of people, different sizes, different disabilities, different ways of life, because that's how we're gonna, like, keep the planet alive. That's how we survive the apocalypse, is, like, relying on each other.
No, I mean, when you've toured, you've been to Canada, you've been to Mexico, South by Southwest, of course, where you encountered our old buddy Nardwar and got yourself to England. And you told me you've even taken yourself to Haiti.
Yeah, been around the world. Hope to go.
Tell us about going to Haiti, starting with what you go through trying to get on and off a plane and how accommodating or not accommodating airports and airlines can be.
Oh, yeah, traveling's a bitch in a wheelchair, especially a power wheelchair. So, wasn't until recently that I started traveling in a power wheelchair, or traveling alone. Before, I would mostly have strong-bodied people with me, and a manual chair and more assistance. Again, I'm only 60 pounds, so I'm not, like, I'm fairly feasible to get around, inaccessible things. But yeah, the older I get, like, the more it bothers me. And if I'm traveling alone in my power chair, which I have been doing often to the Bay, and even New York, anyway, they take your wheelchair, your $30,000 wheelchair, custom fitted wheelchair, and they throw it under the plane with all the bags. Yeah, this chair weighs 360 pounds without me in it, so it's a monster. And they, like, take your chair away from you. You get strapped to this little aisle chair, and they, like, get you to your seat, and then you don't go to the bathroom until you land because you can't get on the toilet. Like, And then you pray to any god you believe in that your wheelchair makes it on the plane unscathed. And the airlines destroy wheelchairs every day. It's, like, such a common problem for people with disabilities, and not just wheelchairs, but, like, canes, walkers, any kind of mobility aids, like, you name it. They trash them, and you're left fucked when it's usually a long wait time to get anything repaired because everything's so custom and monopolized. Like, it's really a pain in the ass, and it has killed people. United Airlines killed a woman a couple of years ago by destroying her chair, and it's a really, really shitty reality for us. And
how did that wind up killing her?
Well, because they destroyed her chair. She had a pretty, like, special seating system. So a lot of people that, like, sit in wheelchairs for so long throughout the day, like, have to have a custom seat so that you don't get, like, pressure sores. And you have to have, like, a way to tilt your body. Because all of our bodies are different. Our seats are, like, very customized to us. So her chair was destroyed. They put her in a loaner chair, loner chairs are like shitty and violet and not your chair. Like it takes so long to get used to a chair. And then she like developed all these like medical problems from not having her chair, her means of life. And she passed away.
Somehow, you and your chair, whichever one were using, got all the way to Haiti unscathed and made it home, and you obviously got around in that country. What brought you to Haiti in the first place?
I did not bring my power chair to Haiti, that's for sure. And I would not ever bring my power chair to Haiti unless I was being hosted by other people in power wheelchairs. Right. I went to Haiti. I had been collaborating with the rappers from Haiti since the earthquake, the big earthquake. A guy from another band in town had gone down to do some like relief efforts, volunteering, and he came back with like all this recordings of dope rappers rapping in Creole. And I'm pretty snobby about rap, and it was like so good. I didn't even like need it to be translated. Like the flow is dope. Creole's like a really, Creole is just like a rapper language. It's like hard. It's got like a dope rhythm cadence to it. So I started like sending them beats. And every time he would go back to Haiti, he'd set up like a DIY studio in the camp, like the displaced camp for all these Haitians that didn't have anywhere to live after the earthquake. And then I started working with Youth on Record, that teaching organization, and the founder. We wanted to pilot basically what we were doing here at Youth on Record in Haiti with our rapper friends teaching music production classes. And so we brought a hella laptops with Ableton and microphones and headphones and my wheelchair. I brought my other spare wheelchair that we painted for a music video that Chris Bagley did. Yeah, we went down there with all this music gear. We had a budget to pay Haitian musicians and rappers to teach classes for like 6 months. And I brought my wheelchair, and then I brought a spare wheelchair that I painted for the first music video that Chris Bagley did with us. And I left that there. Like, we just brought a bunch of gear and left it and hired musicians to teach classes for 6 months.
Hopefully it didn't all get stolen and people who rapped didn't say something that offended somebody else with power and guns and take them out. I mean, or maybe I've been reading too much stuff about Haiti that makes it appear more dangerous than it actually is.
Yeah, you know, it's a lot of the music we were getting. I mean, like, yeah, it's like real. It's rough in Haiti for sure, but there were like, we have this one rap that's like a cholera public service announcement from like when the UN brought a bunch of cholera right after the earthquake. And like, yeah, because Haitian Creole is like such a hard language, like, and because they're very black, like it's easy to assume that like their rap music is like violent, and that's definitely not the case. Like, there's, as with any kind of rap music, there's rap music of all kinds. There's like the empowerment, there's the fuck the system, there's the gangster rap, there's the revolution rap. I mean, Haiti is the most revolutionary place in the world. I mean, they've overthrown every colonizer that's ever touched their island, and they've, yeah, like everybody there is all about freedom, freedom over everything, like freedom over money, freedom over politics, freedom. It's a really, really, whoa, magic place. And yeah, they're the first.
How long were you there?
Almost 5 weeks. They're the first independent black republic in the world.
Right.
They overthrew the French, the Spanish, the Brits, and the Americans. So yeah, the music, the rap music is a reflection of all of that. It's a It's a wild place. It's definitely the Wild West. There's very little wheelchair access to. Everybody I did meet that was in a wheelchair, like, doesn't go very far. And, yeah, I mean, obviously, like, just being a white person is, like, you don't belong, or, like, you stick out like a sore thumb. But then being, like, a tiny white girl in a wheelchair, yeah, it was a trip going anywhere for me. Like, I had to hire, like, some homies to, like, be my bodyguards and, like, get me through, because it was a lot.
Didn't you tell me at one point that there were people occasionally freaking out at the sight of you on the street, not just because you were white or small, but just assumed you were some kind of demon?
Yeah, I mean,
something from Satan. Didn't you tell me that or not?
Probably, yeah. Like, you know, Haiti's like a real magic place, and disability is seen a lot, like, as a curse. So there's like a lot of that ideology around disability, and like there was a lot of like gawking and like crowding around, because, you know, it was just, yeah, people don't see that, you know. I mean, it's not even really represented in the media much here in the States or like other places, but like especially in Haiti, like, you do not see anyone like me. So it was like a real spectacle. It was a real spectacle for me to go anywhere. Yeah, people would gather and like, yeah, it was a trip.
Back across the water, disability activist issues. And some of the people who do it. Do you know who Mike Irvin is? Do you know him? He writes a column in the progressive magazine called Smartass Cripple. Okay. And also blogs at Smartass Cripple. And he is very, very full on and very, very educational.
Okay.
Every single month. And one of his columns that really kind of rattled me was how there are still, you know, hospital corporations, medical corporations, Republic thugs who don't want to pay for Medicaid or anything, who are still trying to ram disabled people into nursing homes and throw away the key.
Yeah.
I get the impression Mike Irvin may be a little bit more disabled, need more help taking care of himself than you do. It seems like, I think he has to be, you help with his clothes and eating and bathing and things like that. All the things that some of the more cruel elements who run countries, I mean, Hitler just wanted everybody killed. But I think if you're behind closed doors, you've got budget hawks like Paul Ryan or some of the modern ones, they're probably not much different. But the whole idea that we should, after all the Americans with Disability Act and accessibility, just put people back in nursing homes so that nursing home monies can profit off of them with government aid and they don't get to go anywhere.
Yeah, I mean, eugenics is a real thing. And people with disabilities have for a long time been seen better off dead than alive. Or if we can't kill them all, then out of sight, out of mind, right? Institutionalize, incarcerate. It still goes back to that, like, better off dead mentality, that it's not as, like, I mean, it sounds draconian in certain ways. And then, like, you know, with this COVID shit, it's like eugenics is like, it's not behind closed doors. It's like, you know, millions and millions of people have died and are going to continue to die of COVID. And the only reason, like, it's okay to the government is because majority of the people that are dying are already disabled and are already seen as, like, unfit or unproductive, unable to contribute to the economy the same way that, you know, more fit people are. And yeah, like, the nursing home, like, people have fought so goddamn hard to be able to live in their homes and live in their communities. Yet here we are, like, in this public health pandemic that is just completely disposing disabled bodies by the millions. And, like, A lot of people aren't even batting an eye about it, you know? It's like, it's whoa, you know? And that's, you know, COVID runs rampant in institutional settings and nursing homes, and it also is like out here everywhere. So people with disabilities, like, yeah, it's really a fucking fight to stay alive.
Where are you with a sector of hardline anti-abortion people who claim that a major reason to ban that reproductive right and that choice is because allowing abortions discriminates against the disabled, because some people get abortions if they find out their child is going to be born severely disabled?
Yeah, there's always been, like, there's a lot of people that continue to fight really hard to keep disabled babies and kids alive. Once again, they're seen better off dead than not. And yet, like, ultimately, I'm pro-choice, of course. Like, you can't raise a disabled kid in this environment easily, you know? And I think it's like, I would be sad if people abort their kids because they're disabled. And also, I am not sad that people are aborting kids, because we can't take care of all the ones that are living right now. So,
and a lot of the hardline anti-abortion people, they care about their own, the unborn, but once they're born, fuck them.
Exactly.
No aid, you know, no Medicaid. You know the type.
Yeah, and people would people would rather just dispose disabled bodies than actually fix the problem. So, like, assisted suicide is usually just an easier method of, like, undoing disabled people that need fucking healthcare. It's easier for a judge to say you should die than it is for a judge to say you should have access to housing and healthcare. It's just like, it's easier to dispose disabled bodies than it is to make more access, which is like fucked up. And that's
some people who choose to end their lives, a major factor in it is that they are, you know, they're dying of a degenerative disease and they are in excruciating pain 24/7.
Yeah, like, once again, I'm pro-choice, you know, but I'm just saying, like, historically, those laws, disabled people have had an easier time being able to kill themselves than they have getting housing and healthcare.
Like, and on top of that, being paid properly if they get a job. Another one of Mike Irvin's huge complaints, and boy, I agree with him here, is it's still legal in most states to pay a disabled person less than minimum wage because they're disabled. You know, it's part of the Fair Labor Standards Act, ironic name, from 1938, 14C, certificate saying, okay, this person's disabled, we don't have to pay them as much. And his quote was, about 70,000 people in this country are subject to being paid sub-minimum wage because they are disabled.
It's also not even legal for disabled people to get married. Like, everybody thought that with this, like, equal marriage shit, that, like, everybody could be married now. But, like, disabled people to this day cannot get married if they're relying on benefits. They will lose their benefits. Like, I would lose my benefits.
Unbelievable.
Overnight if I could.
But you and your boo have gotten married, but not through the legal system, just unofficially. Didn't you tell me you were doing different marriages in different places to celebrate your union?
We are unlawfully wedded, and we hope to have many weddings and continue to.
Yeah, I mean, I can legally marry people. I can legally marry people, whether you tell the authorities or not. I'll do a wedding.
Well, we could have a punk wedding too. Yeah, we'll probably do like a wedding tour. I don't know.
There you go. Well, we are running out of time here, so I want to thank you for being here, as well as you put it, when one of your interviews after nailing Cory Gardner's office, I think this is off of Democracy Now, is you see yourself and your art and your activism as carrying the torch of other pioneers, rule breakers, crusaders, dating back even in Denver to the 80s, the 70s, and the 60s, you know, the Chicanos and Adapt and many others. And as you put it, you're carrying the torch. And boy, you definitely are. So here's to more arson for both of us. Yes. Bye for now.
Thanks for having me.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.